Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. While visiting Poland, Joe Biden said out loud what many in Russia have long believed. NATO eastward expansion has always been about forced regime change in Russia. And Ukraine has been at the center of that strategy. When people tell you who they are, believe them. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Xavier Moreau. He is the founder of the Center of Political Strategic Analysis, StratPol. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, start out with George in Budapest. Well, people call it a gaffe, George, but it wasn't a gaffe. He actually said exactly what he thinks, what his administration thinks, that Putin must go. We've heard this in an administration that he worked for in the past, Obama administration, where Assad must go. I mean, so this really, the mask has fallen off. They have no interest in ending this conflict in Ukraine, and the Ukrainians are going to pay a very heavy price for what is nothing less than hubris. George.
Yes, it was quite a chilling address by Biden, because not only did he make that comment right at the end when he talked about Putin cannot remain in power, but the whole tone was so belligerent, so aggressive. If you compare that with Ronald Reagan at his most aggressive, like his speech in London in 1982, when he talked about the evil empire, Biden's address was more ferocious than anything Ronald Reagan said at that time. And it was quite chilling. And what was also chilling was that he said, this is going to go on for many years, even for decades. So he's essentially mobilizing Europe, the United States, for a long, protracted Cold War, hot war against Russia. And of course, he doesn't really justify any of that as to why any of this is necessary, other than Russia is evil, Putin is evil. And it really was an extraordinary also that he never envisaged any kind of a way to bring this fighting to an end. So when you look at that speech, he says, really, we are going to just go on with this. You know, we're going to keep pouring in more and more arms. We're going to keep encouraging everybody with this heightened belligerent rhetoric. And this is forever. You know, we're all going to have to sacrifice our lives for this this Cold War come hot war. As I say, it's more ferocious than anything we heard during the Cold War. And I think that it's a very chilling vision that Biden laid out in Warsaw.
Essentially, like the popes of centuries ago called for a crusade. That's essentially what he's done here. Xavier, with the concept of war, it's a military conflict, but how you get there. A declaration of war, then there's the end of war, you have surrender, kind of the World War II model. We don't have that anymore. There's a state of war going on right now. It's hybrid and it crosses every single sector. And plus with the confiscation and freezing of Russian assets, central bank assets, that's a fiduciary matter that has usually been never touched. They've touched it this time. So it's full out, full throated conflict. And it's not going to end until apparently one side is vanquished. That's what it sounds like to me. Xavier.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, in my opinion, Biden live in a such a Zuckerberg metaverse, because actually he's losing the war. He lost the war. The U.S. lost the war the first time against Russia in 2008 in Georgia. They lost the war against Bashar al-Assad when Russia decided to support Bashar al-Assad. And now they live in this metaverse where the Russian economy is weak, when the Russian economy, where the Russian army is weak and the Ukrainian army is strong and will defeat the Russian army. But it's not the case. It's completely different. And what I'm very surprised is that Biden can make such a declare some such a war, even on economic point of view, on a military point of view, but he has no chance actually to win it. So yes, again, he lives in a parallel world, but it's not the only one. Emmanuel Macron, for instance, made a declaration 2 days ago, and he said the same thing, that Russia is about the Russian economic is about to bankrupt. But it's false. It's completely false. And the Russian army is about to win this war, and his economy will be, in my opinion, reinforced. We'll use the sanctions to find new markets, new providers, new opportunities. So it's again the Western elites live in another world.
Yes, yeah, so George, it's almost a fantasy world that they're talking about here. Before, you know, Biden's a big announcement announcing a new Cold War, maybe we'll come up with our own term here on Crosstalk, but we had Russian officials coming out saying that the first phase of their special operation in Ukraine has come to an end. What I find very interesting about that, and you and I have talked elsewhere about this, is that the Russian military and political elites don't really talk much about what they're doing, okay? Unlike what you would get from, you know, a blow-by-blow, second-by-second Gulf, you know, a Gulf War or something like that. The Russians are really quite demure about it. And it makes one think, you know, what the next step is. Because, of course, Russia's losing the war. They're stalled, you know, all of this stuff here. Well, there's no evidence of it whatsoever. And that there's a built-in assumption that they actually know what the strategy is. But they certainly don't. Take it away, George.
No, that's right. Because the story that Russia was losing the war was put out on day one. You know, London announced, oh yeah, Russia's losing the war. Putin was expecting to win this within 24 hours. You know, how on earth did London know this? And why would Russia assume that Ukraine, population 46 million, armed forces the size of, you know, 260,000, huge army, particularly one that has been trained, replenished for years and years by NATO, why would they think it's all going to be over in 24 hours? It was never explained, but they created the narrative that Russia's losing. And from then on, it's been repeated every day. Russia's losing, the Russian offensive is stalled. And so whatever will happen, because at some point, I think Russia will announce that we have finished, we've completed our operations. There aren't going to be any negotiations. It's clear that what NATO, the United States, and everybody's telling Zelensky, don't negotiate on anything. You know, don't waste your time. You're winning, and we're going to keep helping you. So there's not going to be any negotiations. So Russia will at some point announce, yeah, it's over. We have achieved what we wanted to achieve. And in that moment, the Western media will, of course, repeat, that's it, Russia lost. Russia has failed. This was a catastrophic decision by Putin. Putin will be overthrown in no time at all because the military elite will be very dissatisfied with what Putin has accomplished. But I think, as Xavier said, Russia is accomplishing slowly but surely everything that he's doing. And there are no Ukrainian counteroffensives. You know, the Ukraine isn't achieving anything militarily. A little skirmish here and there, you know, they destroy an armored personnel carrier or something. That isn't the counteroffensive. That isn't winning the war. And I think then, you know, that's it. Russia will achieve what it wants, which I expect is a buffer state, you know, Novorossiya. And then, you know, Ukraine can just, or Poland can have what's left of Ukraine.
You know, Xavier, it was about a year ago, if I can remember correctly, that Foreign Minister Lavrov said that if Ukraine were to become a member of NATO, Ukraine as a sovereign state would cease to exist. They didn't make it into NATO, but the thrust to get it in has actually resulted in the same outcome here. If there is no negotiations, which I agree with George, they go up to Belarus and they chit-chat and they run out the clock. They have no intention of negotiating while their country is falling apart. I mean, this is probably the most asinine strategy I've ever heard in my life. Meanwhile, up to 4 million people have left the country. I mean, what is it going to be left to fight for? I mean, the strategy coming out of Western capitals is at total expense of Ukraine in every sense of the word. Go ahead, Xavier.
No, actually, the problem for the West is that Putin is not a poker player. And he said on the 5th of March, he said that our demands are clear. We want recognition of independence for the republics. We want recognition of the Crimea as a part of Russia, and we want you to denazificate and to neutralize. But he said at the same time on the 5th of March, this is the current proposal, but there is, you know, a date you have to respect. And in my opinion, the Russian demands are changing now. And if you look at what they do in the cities they completely control, for instance, in Kherson, in Melitopol, and soon in Mariupol, they put in place a new administration.
Yeah.
And for instance, I read that in Kherson, in the Kherson region, they will start to use the ruble in April. So in my opinion, the Russian war aims have changed, because again, they think that Putin could change his mind. But when Putin said something, and he said on the 5th of March, if you don't accept quickly our demands will change. I know it's changing. And so this is a complete fault, the Zelensky and the Zelensky sponsors' fault, that they can't accept the fact that when Russia says something, you said about Lavrov telling 1 year ago, if you want to take Ukraine inside NATO, we won't accept it. They said in November, in December, if you want to start ethnic cleansing operation, the famous Croatian solution, so we will react. They said exactly, Gerasimov, the chief of staff, said it. The Minister of Defense, Shoigu, said it. Lavrov said it. Putin said it. But they don't want to listen. It's too late.
Exactly, you're absolutely right, George. I mean, I've always found it quite whimsical when you read Western media or American cable TV. What is Putin thinking? What does Putin want? You know, I mean, it's always the same thing. It's just like, why don't you just go to the Kremlin website or TASS and maybe just read official announcements? I mean, you could take it with a grain of salt, but it's there in black and white. It's pretty easy. If you go to TASS, for example, they always write everything in very simple sentences. Have you noticed that?
It's very simple. And the strange thing is that now there's a lot of belligerent talk about, hey, well, why don't we escalate, you know, with, you know, even putting in, as Poland proposes, we'll put in these NATO peacekeepers into Ukraine, or let's set up a no-fly zone. Well, Putin isn't going to escalate. He's not crazy enough to start a nuclear war. It's okay. We can do this. You know, there's no danger of that. People like Ambassador Michael McCall say this kind of thing. No, Putin isn't going to escalate. It is quite clear that Putin and the Russians are not bluffing. They are very, very serious, and they are making it very clear. If you get involved in this war, we will attack you. We will attack NATO. You know, don't doubt about it. And so, but it's bizarre that people just continue talking. Oh, no, Putin is just bluffing. He's not going to risk a war with the mighty NATO, with the mighty United States. Look, believe it. They'll do it.
We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the Home Edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. Let's go back to Xavier. Just George is making a point when we went to the break here, and it's something that I thought about and said actually quite a few times. The Russians don't bluff, they act. And this is the fundamental misunderstanding that the West has had. I mean, one of the things, and I did crosstalk after crosstalk after crosstalk from December all the way to February 24th, is that you're not listening. These are serious demands, actually ultimatums. Let's call it what they are. You know, if you don't, one to NATO, one to the United States, the decision maker, the United States. If you do not take our demands seriously, this is going to end badly. I told you so. This is what's happened. Xavier.
You know, I could add that it's serious and reasonable demands, actually, what they asked 4 months ago already. But again, nobody wants to listen to them. And actually, if you look at the West and the Western medias, what they do, they try to find some sign. For instance, the last 4 days, Shoigu wasn't available because he's working. So he has no time to go to the TV
show. There's a conflict going on,
And so and everybody, where is Shoigu? So, you know, they want to find some signs. We will show that Putin isn't happy by what happened in Ukraine. So he's going to fire Shoigu. They did exactly the same with the chief of the intelligence service. They did exactly the same with a central bank. But no, actually, everything going following the plan, and everything is okay. Okay, and as you say, just say, Russia said what they want to do. It's always very clear. You just have to listen to what they want. And what they want now is to destroy the Ukrainian army, because the main forces of the Ukrainian army is in the east. So they have destroyed them in Mariupol. They are now destroying them in the north region of Donbass, around Kramatorsk and Slavyansk. And after that, they are going to move to take the city, which are necessary to be taken to implement, in my opinion, the new political solution in this region. So they will take Kharkov, they will take Odessa, they will take Nikolaev. And actually, the West can't do anything against that. So this is time to negotiate. But as you said, exactly the point is the Zelensky sponsor don't want to negotiate. And so...
if you don't negotiate, George, then the Russians will create political facts on the ground that no one can do anything about. This is the banality and the stupidity of this approach here. Oh, and plus... more and more Ukrainians die needlessly when a negotiated end could come about. But that's on Zelensky, okay? That's on Zelensky. But there's a plethora of theories out there of how this will move forward. You and I have talked about in the past Lugansk, Donetsk, independent states. Have treaty obligations with Russia, a new entity, Nova Russia, that would be tightly aligned with Russia and the two new independent states. And there's nothing anybody can really do about that, unless, you know, Michael McFaul wants to go nuclear, okay? Nobody seriously wants to do that. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, they're creating the facts on the ground, and unfortunately, Ukraine is led by absolutely disastrous leaders, as has happened really since 2014. You know, here they were, they started off with a big, huge country with Crimea, and they're slowly losing every, you know, vast chunks of this country. They've already lost Crimea. They're about to lose, Donetsk, Lugansk, and more, the Kharkov and so on. They're about also to lose, they've already lost the Azov Sea coast. They could well lose the Black Sea coast. So that's the result of a terrible leadership in Kyiv that took its lead from the United States and the West, not realizing the United States and the West has no interest in Ukraine. They have absolutely no interest in the welfare of Ukrainians. They always saw Ukraine as just a battering ram against Russia. And they haven't learned their lesson, and they're still taking their cues. And Zelensky, he'll be on with the Hollywood Oscar show, and everyone will stand up and clap him, and they love the whole T-shirt, unshaven look and everything. But it's not delivering anything for Ukraine. And it's losing more and more of his country. And, you know, going back to Biden's speech, Biden envisages this. This is just going to go on forever. He doesn't care about what it does for Ukraine. He just wants it to go on forever because he sees this as politically very useful for the United States. It isn't really, but nonetheless, Biden and all the people around him, like Victoria Nuland and Blinken and the rest of them, they think, hey, this is a really good thing for the United States geopolitically.
Yeah, I think it could end up a rump state. You know, it could be called Nulenstan or maybe Bandera Stan. I mean, those are two possible names for it here. On a more serious note here, Xavier, the world is watching all of this. The Indians are not on board. The Chinese are not on board. Most of Africa, almost all of South America. As you said quite rightly a few minutes ago, you know, Russia's security demands were quite reasonable. They were never addressed. Yeah. The outside world looks and says, no, you're creating a conflict where it's not necessary. And with, you know, we have the case of the confiscation of Venezuelan gold, now confiscating assets from the Russian Central Bank. I think the Indians, Chinese say, no, we're not banking with you people anymore. And also the dollar, you trifle with it too much. Why should we invest in that? This is a financial suicide for the West. Xavier.
Exactly. Actually, Biden and the Western elites, they just killed Bretton Woods. So they killed the Fortress, the Bretton Woods agreement in 1945. So they destroyed the fortress they used to dominate the world. And if you look at, you are just talking about India. India is about to implement a new system to pay the goods they want to buy in rupee. Chinese has already such a system, and now in Russia, every bank want to be connected to the CIPS. Even Saudi Arabia, they want to sell the oil to China using yuan currency. So it's the end of one world, and it's a birth of a new one. And this new one is not including the West. That's a big problem, because the future of economy, of the world economy, is in Asia. Everybody knows that for the last 15 years. And what we observe now is that Russia did its choice, because the West threw Russia in the end of China, and in India, in Brazilia. Brazil doesn't want to support sanctions against Russia. Even at this moment, Bolsonaro asked Russia for building submarines. So it's a complete disaster for the West, and they have just lost this incredible advantage is the currency, and not only the dollar, but actually euro as well. Nobody will use definitely euro and dollars as a reserve currency. And this is a big problem, for instance, for a country like France, because France is strongly debt. It's about to bankruptcy, on the contrary of Russia. So if we can't use our money to take some credit with a low rate, it will be very problematic. And we are about to meet a very, very strong economic crisis. Currency, energy, food, it will be terrible.
I would add on to that, debt, a lot of debt as well here. You know, George, I sometimes wonder if the Germans say, no, we should be on the other side, okay? Because they're going to be crucified if Biden gets what he wants, okay? Essentially, this is flipping the switch off. The lights will go out in Europe if Biden and Blinken and Sullivan and Newland and Boris Johnson and Sergeant Schultz, you know, if they all, you know, go down that path, it is just a economic suicide for the EU. Who would want that currency if Germany is not, you know, the factory of Europe? Go ahead.
Exactly. And that's the point. Once they did this, this is an extraordinary step of seizing a country's central bank's foreign reserves. Well, what country is going to want to hold its reserves in dollars or euros, knowing that if they pursue any policy that the United States doesn't like, that money can be seized? I mean, anything. I mean, you know, let's say that they're doing business with Russia. We don't like that. We'll take your currency. So obviously countries are going to start moving away, you know, either putting them into different banks or holding their money in something different, like just gold or oil and wheat, you know, something tangible rather than dollars. But going back to your point about Sergeant Schultz, Germany rejected the plan that was envisaged by Russia, you know, from the 1990s on, which is a kind of a partnership between Russia's raw materials, a vast market, and German industrial know-how. Why Germany rejected that is a mystery. But now, essentially, Europe has become completely subordinate to the United States. I mean, really, there isn't any Europe. I mean, who's going to deal with Europe? I mean, you might as well go to the boss. The boss is Washington. You know, why deal with Europe at all now?
Xavier, you know, at the end of the day, you know, this entire strategy to create a Europe without Russia, even against Russia, is it's severely damaging Europe's future, because I would make the claim that this strategy is isolating Europe. It's not isolating Russia, certainly not China, not India, not Brazil. Xavier.
Actually, it's worse than that, because what they are doing now, by increasing energy price, they are destroying the German economy, which will be less performant. And the problem is, at this time, the European Union live on Germany's money.
Yep.
That's the point. And for instance, when I look at the Polish government wanted to put more sanction to complicate the economical situation for Germany, and at the same time, they receive 3% of the GDP as a loan, not as a loan, as a gift from the European Union. So a gift from the European Union is a gift from Germany, essentially, and from France, and from Italy. But what they do now, they are destroying the European economy, but they live thanks to this European economy. And that's incredible. What they do, as I said in the beginning of this program, they live in a metaverse, a Zuckerberg metaverse, and they don't understand how they get the money. And they get the money from Germany, and they're destroying the German economy.
I'd like to point out, too, is this strategy is destroying the West middle class. Maybe that's intentional. Another topic for another day. I want to thank my guests here in Moscow and in Budapest, and I thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.